Morning again, everyone. I just want to say again how happy I am to be back and to see you all. And as always, just so, so grateful for all of the support that you all give me. It really does keep me going, and I feel it from all those miles away. So thank you so, so much for all the support you guys give me. I just wanted to come back to some of the questions that Chris had asked during the offering about thinking about where can we serve, how can we make someone smile, and just wanted to start with a kind of, I remember kind of being the one watching missionaries and people who were working overseas coming and thinking, wow, aren't they amazing what they do? But I just want to challenge that a bit this morning, that everyone's got something amazing to do. It doesn't make me special or more amazing than any of you because I'm working overseas. That's the call that God's put on my life. But everyone has a different calling. And what I loved about what Chris led us to this morning was that it's reminding us that we can serve in our everyday. We serve in, actually, you know, my life has become ordinary, I guess. Living in Uganda, you know, I go through the ups and downs and struggles as everybody else does day to day of what it's like just living life and doing life. And it's that beautiful reminder just to be looking for the ways that we can serve others in every part of our lives, not just because someone's been called overseas, but actually what can you give from your story, from your day-to-day life? And we're going to talk a bit more about that this morning. So I'm just going to pray again, and then we'll get started. Father God, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for a new chance to know you better, to understand you more. I pray for everybody in this room, Lord. Would you have a special message to speak to each person, Lord? Would we have our hearts and hands open? Would you use me, Lord, to speak right to people what they need to hear from you this morning. In Jesus' name. Amen. So as Chris has said, and as those of you who've been around will be aware, we're in talking about ordinary life and extraordinary things that God can do with our ordinary lives. And I just loved that idea that God uses our ordinary lives for his perfect plan. So I want to tell you a story of something that happened this year that was very exciting for me. I was just scrolling through WhatsApp and a poster came up of Nick, I hope I'm going to say his name right, Vujicic, who, for those of you who don't know, is a motivational speaker and an evangelist. He's Australian, part Australian, part American, and he has no arms and legs. And I was just really excited that he was going to be coming to Uganda and to see if there was a way I could get him to come to Akisa was my first thought. Spoiler alert, that didn't happen. but I have on the poster with him was a famous singer in Uganda. His name is Levixen. And I just happened to have his number. So I thought, I'll just send a message and see if anything can come of it. I'll tell you how I came to have this band's number a bit later. But I sent a message and just said, I heard that Nick's coming and that you're doing a concert with him. Is there any way that I could have some contact with Nick to see if he would be willing to come to Akisa, because I work with people with disabilities and it would be so amazing for our children to get to see him and hear from him. And he passed me on to the person who was organising Nick's trip, and he unfortunately said, no, there isn't any space in the trip. Obviously, it had all been planned out already. And he was very busy, but they invited us to a VIP event where there was only about 100 people there, and invited us to take some of our children there. And this was just such a huge blessing for us. We took about 7 or 8 of our children and young people, some of them who live with us, some of them who go to our school, and brought their parents with them as well. And so we got to go to this event where there were lots of people and children with disabilities from all over Uganda, and Nick was speaking to them, and it was just amazing, obviously, for our children to see someone from outside their country who also has a disability, who's living their life with such energy and conviction and awareness of what God was doing in his life. One of the most moving moments for Akisa, and for me personally, was one of our young people got up the courage to ask Nick a question on the microphone. Now, she has cerebral palsy and she finds it quite hard to speak, and she was very nervous, so it was quite hard to understand what she was saying, but Nick just waited and listened, and one of our teaching assistants helped him to understand what Jacinta had asked, and it was a very moving moment, and I have a video of that moment, so I want to show you. I just apologise, there's a lot of noise in the background and it's very hard to hear. I will explain what's happened afterwards, but just so you can get a feel for that moment, hopefully. The video is a little bit small, but I'd love you just to watch it. As I say, the beginning, you won't necessarily be able to understand what's going on, but hopefully it will become clear as we go watch the video. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, so for those who maybe couldn't hear or understand the question that she had asked, she asked, how do you deal with being judged and betrayed with having a disability? Isn't that a profound question? She could have just asked, what do you do? But she'd seized that moment of seeing someone who was going through, you know, who could maybe relate to her in how she had struggled in her life with that. And wasn't his response beautiful as well? That we all have a need to be loved, and that even, you know, even when she doesn't feel loved by the people around her, God will always love her and be close to her. That moment was incredibly moving and powerful for Jacinta and for all of us around her to see her in that moment. And Jacinta actually has parents that really love and cherish her. But that's not the reality for a lot of children with disabilities in Uganda. There's a lot of superstition, there's a lot of beliefs about different things to do with disability that can lead to stigma and children being shut in their houses and things. And so what a beautiful moment for us to see Jacinta in that space. As a result, really, of having that chance to go to Akisa Academy, she'd been working on her speech with our speech and language therapist, and to have that confidence in that space to speak up for herself was just so amazing to see that, you know, this is part of what Akisa Academy is doing, is giving children a voice. But for me, it kind of felt like a rounded moment to be able to be a part of orchestrating that. It was, as I say, a bit strange that I had the number of this random, quite well-known singer in Uganda. So when I lived in Uganda in 2012, that's when I went there for my gap year, I was working with Smile Charity Uganda, who the team went to see when they did their mission trip recently, and I was attending Kampala Baptist Church. So you'll see a young me, and my friend looking very young still as well. On the left, that's Emma. So we sang in the choir together at Kampala Baptist Church. He actually went on to sing on the Uganda's version of The Voice, because he has such a beautiful singing voice. And through that, he met some of the sort of more well-known singers in Uganda. He met Livingston, and there was a time Livingston was coming to Jinja, so this is Livingston on the right. And so he introduced me to him. So through that, very strange thing, because I'm not particularly bothered about meeting famous people. It's not something that's particularly important to me, and I didn't particularly know him very well. I knew we listened to his music at Akisa sometimes, but I just thought, how amazing that I met someone all those years ago that connected me to someone else that connected me to Nick Vujicic, you know? But not even that was the most incredible part of it. The most incredible part was seeing how that impacted the children and families' lives that came to that event, and just seeing, wow, God, you were behind those moments. Like, I just thought it was just quite funny that I was meeting this, you know, random celebrity in Uganda, and it's been kind of a fun story I'd tell people, but I didn't realize that something so simple God could use in such an amazing way in Jacinta's life. It was such a privilege that he used my heart for children with disabilities, and also the fact that I love meeting new people in that moment. But actually, like, there wasn't any special skill that I had for that moment. You know, it wasn't that I had a qualification that led to that moment, or, you know, that was all just doing my ordinary life and God using those connections in my ordinary life to do something amazing in Jacinta's life. Like, I hope that Jacinta found some healing in that moment, that she was able to open up her heart, that how do you deal with the judgment that we deal with as people with disabilities? This is really hard, you know? And being accepted by this whole crowd of people. One of my favorite things about that video was the atmosphere. You could feel a pin drop, you know, because everyone was just listening so intently to Jacinta and what she had to say. And that, I hope, has had a huge impact on Jacinta and how she will live her life from here. But that was orchestrated by God, wasn't it? That wasn't me. I didn't do anything. I couldn't have seen that coming. I couldn't have planned any of that. I could just have an idea, you know, that was obviously God-given anyway. And then we got to see that amazing story in Jacinta's life. And we see that beautiful way that God uses our ordinary lives and our faithfulness to him and our willingness to step out through the book of Ruth. For Ruth and Naomi, this interweaving of their stories leads to one of the greatest story ever told, because that's Jesus coming. Little did they know that as they were just living their ordinary lives, God was preparing Ruth to marry Boaz and become the great-grandmother of King David. Jesus is a descendant of King David. God used Ruth's obedience as part of his great plan to bring a saviour into this world. Isn't that amazing? The book of Ruth acts as a pivotal point in the Bible and in Israelite history. It transitions from the tribal leaders and the judges into a monarchy through the kings of Israel. That's incredible that God uses that book and Ruth's story, because Ruth wasn't even an Israelite, and yet it's a huge turning point in the Israelites' history, this story. David was rightfully king, even though his great-grandmother was a Moabite, and we think that Ruth was written to kind of prove that David was rightfully king through the story that's told about Ruth. So let's just recap the beginning of Ruth. In the video, you saw an overview of the whole story. I want to focus in on chapter 1 this morning. I'm not going to do too much reading of it, because it's obviously quite a long story. I'm just going to summarize it. But I really want to focus in on what kind of led Ruth and Naomi to be going back to the promised land. So it starts with the story of how Naomi came to have a Moabite daughter-in-law. Naomi and her husband fled a famine in Bethlehem and moved to Moab. Whilst they lived there, Naomi's husband died and her sons married Moabite women. After a few years, her sons also died, and she is left with her only family being her daughter-in-laws, Orpah and Ruth. When Naomi hears that God is providing food for the Israelites back in the Promised Land, so the famine is starting to end in the Promised Land, she decides to return home. She starts off with both of her daughters-in-law coming on the journey with her, but eventually Orpah decides to turn back to Moab, with Naomi persistently trying to convince her to go back, and I think she realizes that she wants to be in her home. But Ruth is determined to stay with Naomi, despite Naomi trying to encourage her to go back. So Ruth is now trying to stay with Naomi. And this is probably one of the most commonly quoted parts of Ruth. If anyone has heard a verse from Ruth, it's probably this one: where you go, I go, and where you stay, I stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. So Ruth is saying that to Naomi: I'm going to go and get to know your God. Naomi was seeking God and her home people in this moment, and Ruth chose to go with her, with her mother-in-law, to a new homeland and to make Naomi's God her God. They would never have known that this would have led to Ruth being part of the line that leads to Jesus coming. Ruth's loyalty and commitment to Naomi meant that she had to follow the Lord and turn away from everything that was comfortable and everything she had known, other gods, her family, everything that she knew. If Ruth hadn't made this bold step of faith outside of her comfort zone, and she could have instead followed Orpah back to Moab, because that would have probably felt a lot more comfortable. But the whole rest of the Bible wouldn't be the same. So after the book of Ruth, we would have read a very different story in the Bible if Ruth hadn't made that commitment and that sacrifice to Naomi. Of course, God can write the story in any way. He's God. But he chose to write it with Ruth. And he chose to use Ruth's commitment and obedience as part of the bigger story that he was writing to redeem humanity. And then even her chance meeting with Boaz in the field was ordained by God. So when you get a bit further into chapter 2, so this is Ruth chapter 2, verse 3. It says, so she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz. So just to connect the dots, once they got back to the promised land, because Naomi didn't have a husband or sons, they had no income, nothing to their name, and so they needed to find a way to work. It wasn't particularly common for women to be working in that day, but what they could do by law, is collect the bits that the farmers were dropping, as it said in that, and that was called gleaning. So they would just pick up any extra bits, and they were allowed to have that. And so that's what Ruth was doing. But I just thought it was amazing, the words, as it turns out, like it just happened, that Ruth was in this field with a man who had the ability to redeem Naomi and Ruth from the situation they were in. They were in a really difficult situation. Naomi's grieving, and Ruth is working really hard to make sure that they have a living once they get back. And this man, Boaz, as it said in the video, is their family redeemer. So he actually has an obligation to redeem Naomi. And still, Ruth is the way that Boaz comes to do that. They had landed in a new land with nothing. And it just so happened, as it turns out, that she was in the field she needed to be in. I don't think that just happened. We call them God incidences in our household. It feels like a coincidence, but it's actually something that God is using to work for the good of the people. So the rest is history. God uses this beautiful story of an ordinary lady who gave up everything to know God and to follow the God of her mother-in-law as part of his master plan. I know I'm repeating myself, but it really does amaze me that that is the descendants of Jesus. It's just incredible. And yet, you know, she is a Moabite woman. I'll come back to that in a minute. Our God doesn't change. He's still in the process of using our stories to redeem humanity. See, we're the other side of Jesus coming, so Jesus has already done it, but we're still seeing God working through us to redeem the people around us. He, you know, works through us. He is constantly working for his kingdom to come on earth. And I wonder if sometimes we're just not really aware that every moment of our lives could have eternal significance in someone's life. It could just be one thing that we do. It might not even be something we say that shows them Jesus. You know, and that could change somebody's life. They could come back to know Jesus and to be saved and set free by him by just one moment. You know, for Ruth, it was just saying, I'll go with my mother-in-law to her land. And God used that. He does that for us as well, because he doesn't change. He's the same. Every part of our story is important. None of it is wasted. And that brings me on to the next point that I believe we can learn from Ruth and Naomi. is that we don't need a perfect life for God to use us in his perfect plan. We don't have to have a perfect past. We don't need to be a perfect Christian. There's no such thing, by the way, as a perfect Christian, for God to use us in the story of his kingdom. Isn't that a relief? He will use us, however we are. So I'm going to bring us back to the beginning of the story again, Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. So I just want to focus on Naomi a bit. We always, you know, Ruth is kind of the star of the story. But while I was preparing this talk, I was really touched by Naomi's story. It really spoke to me. And so I just wanted to focus in on her for a second. Because the fact that Naomi and her husband chose to leave the promised land during a famine actually showed that they had taken their lives into their own hands. They weren't trusting the Lord. You know, if they were trusting the Lord, they would have stayed where the famine was, but trusted that the Lord would have provided for them in that famine. But they took their lives into their own hands and took themselves to Moab. And then Naomi allows her sons to marry Moab women, which was actually forbidden. It was against the law in those days. So again, it shows a lack of trust in God and what God has commanded them to do. By the fact that they allow that to happen in their family. And not only that, but she suffered terribly in Moab, didn't she? She lost her father and her two sons. So she fled famine for more trouble. And isn't it true that we sometimes think we can go somewhere else and everything will be okay, and then we end up finding trouble where we've gone to, or we have a lot of hope that this time it will be different or something will be better, and then we feel like we're just going through the same struggles and the same pain, and you know, I've heard a lot actually, even since I've been back, people feel that kind of relentlessness, that there's always something happening and it's always hard. Like, you know, I've seen that in church this morning. You guys have had to carry some really heavy, difficult news, and it's just relentless sometimes, isn't it? It's really hard to carry that grief, and Naomi was carrying that grief of the fact that she had given up everything to move somewhere new, to then lose her whole family. And then she looked back to the promised land and she saw, oh, God's doing something there. God's providing food for them. What am I doing here? I need to go back to where God is. I need to go back to where God is doing something. She clearly was struggling to trust God. She actually says, God has brought misfortune on me. You know, she felt like God had brought this bitterness, this misfortune. But actually, God used that to lead Ruth where Ruth needed to be for the story. So he was also using Naomi. And I really related to that story. I had been waiting for God to finally give me the okay to go to Uganda for about 10 years. I felt him call me in 2012 and I moved in 2022. So I had this long period where I was like, Lord, I know you're calling me, but when am I going and how? You know, and I was starting to get impatient, and I took my life into my own hands and I made some really, really silly decisions during those 10 years that caused me a lot of grief and being away from the Lord. And things happened to me. I developed post-traumatic stress during that time, and it was a really challenging time. And it was in the middle of that time that God said, now, you're going now. And I was like, no way, I'm not ready. I don't even know if I trust you right now, Lord. I was really, because of the things that had happened to me during that time, I was really struggling to trust God's faithfulness. I was really struggling. When I heard people say, he's a good God, I was like, is he? I don't know if I can see that he's good at the moment. You know, I was in this really, really difficult place with my faith. And it was at that moment God came in and said, it's time, you're going. And I was like, how am I going to do that, Lord? You know, and the reason I tell this story is because I think, yeah, as I said earlier, we look at missionaries, at people who get up and go abroad and think that they had their life together when they left. And that's definitely not true for me. Actually, that was the start of a very painful, long journey back to the Lord when I was called again as an adult. You know, you heard that I was called as a child, but it was like a recalling at that point in my life. And I just want to encourage you, like, whatever mess you're in, whatever stupid decisions you're making or things that you're doing that are far, far, far away from what God's plan is for you or what you believe you should be doing, it's never too late, you're never too far. And God could call you right in this moment to do something for him. He will use you in those moments. He doesn't wait for you to be perfect. He doesn't wait for you to be in this situation where you're all happy clappy, everything's wonderful. Actually, it's better when he calls you in that place because it's more real. Your faith is more real. You know, I can testify to that my faith since that moment in my life has been more real because I've realized how much I need the Lord. I was reading a book recently that, you know, someone said, I'm at the end of myself, and the person replied to him, that's exactly where you need to be for God to use you. And that's, I felt that in my life. And I see that in Naomi's story. You know, she was in Moab. She was going through all this grief. She heard that God was coming through for people, and she said, I want to go. I want to be a part of that. I want to see God again. And, you know, it's taking your step in your weakest moment. As I say, for me, it was a weak moment for me, and God met me there in my weakest moment. You know, I often thought, like, God, I am not your typical, stereotypical missionary. I'm a mess. But I think actually, you know, that's part of the problem, is that we always look at other Christians and think they've all got it together, don't they? But actually, we're all real. We're all hurting. We're all broken. We're all doing the best that we can in this fallen world that we're living in. You know, I just knew that I loved children with disabilities and that I needed to go where God was calling me. But yeah, very ordinary person with a willing heart. And that was the same for Naomi and Ruth. With their actions, they quietly said, Lord, where you go, I will go. And that should be what we also pray. Lord, where you go, I will go. And that's all I did. And I think, you know, it's really easy to look at, yeah, serving, that it's you get up, you pack up everything, you leave everything and you go to another country, but that's not true at all. You know, our ministries are right in front of us. Yeah, for me, that's what God has called me to do, but he doesn't call everybody to do that. He calls some people to minister right where they are, and I think sometimes that's harder. In some ways, it's easier to love people who you've just met who are far away. Sometimes it's harder to meet the people you're doing the day-to-day with, isn't it? To love the people you're doing the day-to-day with, because that's when the frustrations come out. And you're called to love the people around you at work, at home, in this city. It's not just for the people going. It's for all of us. As we said before, you know, you can pray, God, how can I serve people this week? And for some of you, the call might be to go. And if it is, God will show you the way. But for some of you, you need to ask God, like, where you go, I go, and show me where that is. And finally, I want to remind us, as it's already been coming through and what I've been saying, that everyone has value in God's story and his kingdom. Everyone has value in God's perfect plan. The theme that runs through the series that you guys have been looking at with the different women is that God is using ordinary people who are obedient to him to do extraordinary things. We see this not only in the women, but in all of the characters throughout the Old Testament, that they are just ordinary people who make big mistakes. And God uses their stories for his glory and his kingdom. They're not people with a lot of money, status, qualifications. In fact, more often than not, he chooses the most vulnerable people in society to do his work. Naomi would have been considered one of the lowest in society in Moab at the time. She was a foreigner there. She was a widower who had lost two sons. She had absolutely nothing, and yet God used her in his story. Ruth was a foreigner to the Israelites when she got there. Some translations even use the word alien. He could have used an Israelite woman to marry Boaz. That would have been very simple. and give birth to King David, because that was his chosen people. But the fact that God used Ruth sent a very important message to all of us, that God was not only working for his chosen people, he was working for everybody. He was working for the salvation of everyone. And so it was really important that Ruth was in that lineage of Jesus to show that it wasn't just for a special chosen people. This gift that was going to come into the world through that lineage, Jesus, was for everyone. We are all part of God's family, and we can all choose to make that God our God. God uses these women in his perfect plan, and just because they were willing to trust him, that was it. And I think for me, this also spoke to me in that I think it's really easy to always look at who we can serve, which is really important as Christians, but I have been served by children with disabilities. They have taught me so much about who God is, about who Jesus is, You know, we all teach each other, and I think something we need to move from in the church is recognizing that we are all serving each other. It's not just the needy, but we're serving, you know, we're all serving each other. And to recognize that we can learn so much from each other. In Uganda, children with disabilities are seen as the lowest in society. Some would wonder why we care for them, but our teachers choose to advocate for these children. Despite their standing in society, our staff make huge sacrifices for them, the way that Ruth and Naomi did. And we see that God is using their stories to turn their lives around. So there's a girl who just joined Akisa this year in one of the classes. Her name's Tendo. I think a picture's going to come up. This is Tendo. Isn't she gorgeous? So Tendo means praise in Luganda. Tendo is so excited to be at school. She's about 14 and she's at school for the first time because we had a space come up. And when she came to school, she's just been so excited. She just laughs and shouts all day. She's non-verbal, so she can't speak words, but she certainly speaks. It's very clear she has a lot to say and she needs to be given a way to say it. So we have an amazing speech and language therapist who is working on giving her a communication system, probably a communication book of symbols that she will be able to use to say everything that she needs to say. And what a joy that we can serve her in that way, but also, you know, she served me. There was a week that I was feeling really down and disheartened. You know, this isn't, it's not easy to live far away from home, and sometimes, you know, I start questioning, like, is what I'm doing here really worth being that far away? You know, and I start to struggle with, you know, what am I actually doing? And because I've been there a while as well, I've seen so many amazing changes. I wonder, like, when will God call me back? Or has he still got a lot for me to do here at Akisa? You know, those thoughts come sometimes. And I was having one of those weeks where I was just feeling a little disheartened. And me and Tendo just had a great laugh together. We were just making some silly jokes. And she really just brightened my day with her smile and her laugh. And it reminded me why I was there and what I'm doing. And, you know, that energy that she gave me then gave me energy for other children in the school. And so, yeah, it's really important to recognize how we all serve each other. And she, you know, she's the one who led me to Jesus that week, not the other way around, because I saw Jesus in her and how she was bringing pure joy into my life that week. And it is such a privilege to be able to recognize that. And I, you know, it's such a privilege to be part of what God is doing at Akisa. He's using us to restore some of his kingdom here on earth, to see his precious children valued and loved and cherished in the way that they should be, and to be given access to the basic needs that they wouldn't otherwise have had. Good quality education is a basic human right, isn't it? Being accepted and welcomed in your community is a basic human right. And God's design is for children to be in families, not in institutions, not in orphanages, not in children's homes, to be in a family. And Akisa works tirelessly to see those things happen in our school and in the home that we run. So I feel honoured and privileged to be a very small part of that story. Akisa has 150 members of staff, so I really am just a very small part of that story. And it's incredibly hard for me to summarise everything that I have been doing, but I'm going to try and kind of segue now into a bit of a summary of some of the more practical parts of what I do. So this year was a difficult year for us. Akisa, I will go into that a bit more later, but one of the very exciting things was that we got fully settled into our new building. So when I first arrived at Akisa, we were renting. I'm afraid I didn't have any pictures of the buildings, but you can see them in the background of this very smiley face. that's the school hall and a few of the classrooms in the background there. But it's just been amazing for us to be able to teach in a school that was purpose-built for children with disabilities. It just has been so good that the space is theirs and they can get around. You know, everything is flat. There's no steps on the campus, or very few steps, so that they can go anywhere on the campus. All of the rooms are built big enough for them to get in and out with their wheelchairs. And the classrooms are ours, and so we can make them exactly what the children need, which is amazing. So that has been really exciting. As I said earlier, my role is mentoring teachers. So we had a teacher leave at the beginning of the year. So I have been mentoring a new teacher. in the last few months and just helping. So the way that we do it at Akisa is TAs will train up to become teachers, teaching assistants will train up to become teachers. We do that because teacher training, even in this country, has a long way to catch up for training teachers how to teach children with disabilities. It's the same in Uganda. And so it works out much better for us to train from within the organisation so that we can give them the bespoke skills that they need to be able to teach within our population of kids. So, so I've been working with one of those teachers. It was a little out of my comfort zone. The class that she's in is a little bit different to some of the classes I taught here in the UK, but it's been a great challenge and exciting for me to kind of figure things out with her of how we best teach the children in that class. And then I have, as I said, two other teachers. So on the top left next to me is one of those teachers, and then this picture, we're in our living room. I have a wonderful American housemate, Ruth, and we were celebrating Thanksgiving with our teachers that day. And so we have six teachers, and I think five of them are in that photo. So the other big achievement for this year for us was, so Teacher Carol is at the bottom here. I've been working with her ever since I moved there 5 years ago. She's the first teacher I started working with. She's absolutely brilliant, loves the children so much, very hardworking. This year, she's been using the assessment completely by herself, and she has been training other teachers, and that is my goal. I want to work myself out of a job. So I'm really, really proud that this year we've taken that next step into her taking over some of that training responsibility, because that means that what we're doing is sustainable if she can train others and others can train others. And yeah, it's just been amazing and such a gift to have a teacher like Carol to work with who does work so hard. And she is doing such an amazing job, and she's now training others. So that's been very exciting. And the middle picture on the left is just me with the teacher having a meeting with the parents. So we are continuing to do teacher training, training our teaching assistants up. As I said, that's how we do it. There's a building project still going on for us. We've only had phase one completed. Now we're moving on to phase two. There's going to be even more offices and classrooms being built in phase two. So obviously that means we're going to need more teachers. So we've already started the process of training the teaching assistants that are interested in becoming teachers, so that as and when we are able to open up those classrooms, we will have some people who've already had a bit of training, so we won't be starting from ground zero. We also teach other organisations as well. I will go into more detail about all of that later, because I'm aware I've talked a lot. But I just wanted to tell a more difficult story, so just a warning, because it is difficult about a child passing away. But I really wanted it to illustrate really what Akisa does. So this is the story of Elijah. He came to Akisa when he was very young. I can't remember exactly how, but it doesn't really matter. He was probably about 5 years old, and Akisa worked tirelessly, as we do, with his parents to try and reunite him with his biological family, because obviously being with your biological family is always going to be best. But unfortunately, just for several reasons, he wasn't able to happen, and so Akisa home was his home for the majority of his life. He passed away in around February time at the age of about 21. It was expected. He had a degenerative condition, and so it wasn't that it was, you know, unexpected for us, but of course he was part of our family, so it was incredibly hard, particularly for the mamas who've cared for him for his whole life. They are like parents to him. And now there's some traditions and things around burials in Uganda, or what we would call funerals. And so at the point when Elijah passed away, his dad wanted to bury him in his village, which was very hard for us because we were the ones who had kind of brought him up, but obviously wanted to respect that wish of his father. But when we arrived at the burial, he hadn't organized anything for the funeral. There was hardly anybody there, and there was just, even in his death, no respect from his family for him, which was incredibly heartbreaking for us to see. But what was amazing was that I think we were about 40 members of staff that got in buses and went to that burial, and we were able to recognize his life and the love that he had had from us. You know, we had given him a family, we'd given him a place that he could call home. We had loved him in the way that his family couldn't. I made it through the first service. I'm not making it through now. And I think the reason I tell this story, I'm sorry that it is a challenging story, but I just wanted to illustrate just the depth of what Akisa is doing in Uganda, that, as I say, that I'm so proud to be a part of, that we gave that boy dignity all through his life, right up until his death, and in his death, that his family weren't able to give him. And as I say, our hope is always that we will help families to be able to do that. It is not our hope that we will see a child to that point, but it is a privilege when we do get that opportunity as well to be the love and care and attention that that boy deserved, that he wasn't getting where he should have got it. And, you know, Elijah was an incredible boy, you know, warmed the hearts of everyone around him. We miss him dearly, but I'm so proud that we were able to be a part of his story like that. And there are, I could tell you hundreds of stories from Akisa like that. And as I say, a lot of stories also of really successful reunifications where children that have been abandoned have been reunified with their birth families, and their birth families have accepted and loved and cherished their families. And so, yeah, it's a difficult job, and I'm kind of sorry to end us there, but I felt like it would really show just the incredible work that our staff do in loving and serving these children, and that I'm just so grateful to be a part of it. But I just want to bring it back round to, you know, that talk about ordinary. I know none of that feels very ordinary, because it's not and it shouldn't be, but you know, like, God has called me to that place to do that kind of work, and he gives me the strength and the ability to deal with those situations as they come up, and to be a part of that. But he gives us all that ability to serve people in the different ways in our lives. You don't necessarily have to be doing something like what I'm doing. We all have that ability to serve and to love the people around us and to give them that chance to be loved where they maybe haven't been loved. And I just love that question, who can we make smile today? It just takes the focus from within us and puts it out to see, like, how can I also help people to smile outside of me? Thank you for letting me share with you guys this morning. I've been really grateful. And I look forward to sharing a bit more maybe later. Yeah. Thank you.